Basically, what we wanted to look at is, when I came to Ada, was we wanted to look at some arsenic, basic arsenic speciation, and particularly what happens with arsenic speciation in sulfidic environment. And at first, I have to admit, we had a bias that the thioarsenates probably weren't important or actually there. But as things went wrong, we found out that the thioarsenates actually do exist, and along with the thioarsenides. Now, the question is, do they coexist? What factors govern their formation and their persistence in the environment? What kind of redox transformations can we expect? And what kind of kinetics are happening in the system? So basically what we did is we started with arsenic 5 or arsenic 3. We put it with dissolved sulfide, and we went to the synchrotron, and we wanted to look at what products were formed. And we've also done a little bit of chromatography that I'll talk about later. Okay, so as I said, we went to APS, Advanced Photon Source, and we went to the MR-CAT, which is an ID beam line. And the important thing here is that we have this guy. What we had found earlier when we went there is that if you put arsenide in solution, it quickly becomes arsenate. So we knew that there was beam damage potential. So we flowed our solution through the flow cell, and we found that we could actually keep the arsenide stable. And we were fairly confident that we weren't going to get any beam damage. And as you can also see in the lower corner here, we kept all of our reagents, our pump, and everything inside a glove bag under a nitrogen atmosphere to help also minimize any possible redox reactions that may occur from oxygen in the air. Okay, so the important thing here is where do all these positions are? How do we get it to coordination? How do we get oxidation state? So we took a series of model compounds, and so the AF0 is elemental arsenic. The AS3S is orpiment. Okay, the AS is 3-0, which will be arsenite, and the AS5S, we don't really get good separation. They're kind of on top of them. One's arsenite, and the other one's we use as an argite for the arsenic 5 sulfur. And then DMTA, which is dimethylthio arsenate, we also have an edge position for that. And then finally, we have the edge position for the arsenate. Okay, so first we just wanted to basically look at the arsenite. What happens when you put arsenite into a system containing sulfide? And what we have here is we have various derivatives of the zanes here, and we have various concentrations of arsenic 3 and of the sulfide. And if we superimpose our edge positions on it, what we found out was that everything, for the most part, was between the arsenic 3 oxygen, or the arsenite and the thioarsenite. So then we looked at the x-axis. We wanted to say, okay, is this real? So we took the x-axis, and what we found was, if you look over here at the chi function, is that at the high sulfide concentrations, everything was in phase, which indicated that we probably had the same speciation in the solution. But as we dropped the arsenic in the sulfide concentration, as you can see from the upper two, we started to get a phase shift, so we were coming out of phase. So then what we did is we took, and right here, the purple line here, which you can't really see very well on any of these, and the circles are the actual data in the fit, and then the red line is the arsenic 3 oxygen bond path, and the blue line is the contribution of the fit from the arsenic 3 sulfur. So basically what we see is, in the case of, this was pretty much just arsenite, because this had very low, basically we just put a touch of sulfide in the solution, and then as we increase, we start seeing the sulfide, the arsenic 3 sulfur, become more important, and then finally, it was very much the thioarsenite. Okay. And the other thing that's important to remember is that we didn't see any sign of it in any of the fits of the arsenic 5 sulfur or the arsenic 5 oxygen in the fit. Okay, so as I said earlier, we've been trying to use the chromatography because, as you can imagine, XS is not really a good, if you want to go to a field site and you want to take a lot of samples, you really just can't go up to the beam line and take and put all the samples into the beam. So we were looking at this chromatography method that's been proposed by several different people and to see if we could actually see the speciation differences in that. But what we found out really quickly is that we couldn't tell the difference between a thioarsenate and a thioarsenite. They both seemed to be co-eluting. So the controversy seems to be, is the thioarsenate being produced as a, you know, from the beam, or is it, or from the, excuse me, is the thioarsenate being produced as, you know, a redox process in the column, or is it a reduction process converting thioarsenides? We weren't sure which, because we were putting in purely in thioarsenate, what we thought was thioarsenates from our XAS data, and we were seeing the same thing, that peak positions that were shown to be thioarsenates by the researchers who developed this method. Okay, so if you look at, there's a couple of proposed mechanisms. There's a disproportionate reaction where you start out with the arsenite, and then you end up with this product of elemental arsenic and arsenate. And what we were talking about, and this is also as a direct reaction, we just wanted to see what a direct reaction, and this was also proposed by Rochelle. Okay, so first thing we wanted to look at was, okay, we'll just take arsenite, methylarsenite, add the pH 12 of the eluent, and what happens over time. And the chromatography run was about 15 minutes. So we're two times the chromatography run. So we should be able from that to tell whether or not there was any conversion during the chromatography, any redox transformations. And what we saw was that most of the, it was all between the arsenite and the thioarsenite. And the important thing to remember here is we saw no contribution from the arsenate or a thioarsenate, and there was no elemental arsenic formed. And all we saw was the thioarsenite species. So then if we come back to this reaction, what can we say? Well, at this point in time, with what we've seen, we question whether or not the disproportionate reaction can actually occur. So we want to do a little bit more work looking at the direct reaction pathway. So this time we took the arsenic 5, added the same kind of concentration of sulfide, same pH as we did with the arsenic 3, and we wanted to see what would happen. And it, once again, this is over 61 minutes, so it's four times the length of time that the chromatography method would run. And what we saw was basically there was a very small amount, a couple percent of the thioarsenate being formed. Most of it remained as the arsenite at that pH. So we decided to look at the same kind of thing. Well, let's look at an more environmentally relevant pH. And so we chose pH 7 for the direct reaction. So as you can see, at 4 hours, it's almost all entirely arsenate. And then with time, we saw a transformation of the arsenate to a thioarsenate. And this is 215 hours. So it's about 9 days worth of reaction. So we're at the beam line, and as you can see this from the linear combination of fits. We went from about 87% initially to 82% thioarsenate at the end. So, as I said, we were at the beam line. We're saying, okay, can we speed this up to see if we can see any conversion to thioarsenate? So we start thinking about what factors could we play with to change the kinetics of it. So we knew that our arsenate and our sulfide concentrations were pretty much maximized and pretty much optimized. So we decided to take a look at the pH and how that would affect the reaction kinetics. So we took it, so what basically we were theorizing is that the sulfide itself, the undeprotonated sulfide, was actually the reactive species. So if we get below pH 7, we'll produce more of the sulfide rather than the bisulfide. So we modified the pH to pH 3 and pH 5. Okay, so what we have here is this is the initial concentration of pH 3 from when we did that from the 215 minute from previously. So that's where we started at, was that. So we dropped the pH down to 3. And what we quickly saw was there's a very quick redox reaction going on to form a thioarsenite. And if we look at use the linear combination of fits of that data, and we plotted out, it fit a fairly well for the first order reaction, and we came up with a half-life of about 12.1 minutes, which if you remember back from the previous slide, it was a very rapid conversion. within 4 minutes we saw all the antioxidants. That kind of made sense. Sorry, going the wrong way here. Okay, so pH 5, we see something different. And what I want to point out is that this break here is not an arbitrary break. This is actually based on the data. What we saw was basically there was two different kind of kinetic regions. This first region here, if you remember, we started out at 215 hours into this reaction. And so we had this huge thioarsenate pool build up. So what was happening here is during this phase, we were actually still working off that thioarsenate pool. And by the time we got here, the thioarsenate pool had disappeared. And so then after that, we saw another region, which was when we just had the arsenate going to the thioarsenite. So there's a reason why this break is here. And so, but we do see that the kinetics at pH 5 are much slower than they were at pH 3. Okay, so in conclusion, what we can say right now is that both thioarsenates and thioarsenites are possible in natural systems. That thioarsenates are persistent in solution, they don't usually change. Thioarsenates, well, pH above 7, they appear to be stable or metastable. However, when you get thioarsenates below pH 7, they become unstable, and we see a pretty rapid conversion to the thioarsenite species. The disproportionate reaction does not appear to be a major mechanism for the formation of thioarsenates. And the thioarsenates may form from the reaction of from arsenate with the sulfide, and that the chromatography method alone may not be useful in evaluating thioarsenic speciation. And with that, I'll take any questions. First 4 minutes of the reaction at pH 3?
At any of the pHs, it seems like you have a lot of that reaction happening in the first 4 minutes, but your first day is going to be in 4 minutes. So what's happening there? It looks like in some of the cases, they have 90% of the reaction.
Yeah, and that's true. And it's hard to say because, yeah, as you know, you have to get out of the hutch.
Yeah.
And the reaction has already started. So what's happening in that initial few minutes it takes to get out of that thing and get the thing turned on, it's unknown at this time. And that's why we were hoping that the chromatography method would be able to shed some light on that, but it doesn't appear that we can separate out the two right at this point. Oh, well, we had it in the flow cell. So we took a piece of acrylic and we bored out the hole, and then we put, using some Kapton film, we put it in and we just let the solution flow through the flow cell. Beam goes through the Kapton tape, which is the Kapton film, which is similar to what you'd use for solids or anything else. So it's basically just a piece of film that the X-rays can go through, and then we can get the fluorescence data back off of it. Yes. Yeah, we've been doing a lot of work, but we've also been doing some other work with different eluents. And right now, I've got a whole series of other things going. And we'll be going back to synchrotron later on this month, and we're going to try to address some things from what we've seen with the chromatography experiments. But yeah, we have tried to vary, and we're not getting any separation. And I can actually take both arsenite and arsenate, mix them together, and add a little sulfide, and they just coelute. Yeah. Well, this is an IC, I should qualify. The chromatography method we're using is an IC-ICP-MS method. So we're actually,
What about something that's sensitive to oxidation signal, or metric detection?
We haven't looked at that because We haven't looked at that. I mean, that's a possibility, but I don't know if that would really give us much more information. The biggest problem right now is that we have to be able, and so we were hoping by using the mass spectrum data, we'd be able to tell the difference between the species. Now, there's a couple things we've run into a problem with that, is with the oxygen being half the weight of sulfur, you can get some interesting combinations that could be one or the other, depending upon the amount of sulfur. Yeah? Well, that's what we were looking at in those couple of figures. Okay, if we go back to here, this is the allele, page 12. So this is just arsenite. And as you can see, it's in a thioarsenite position. So we're seeing a thioarsenite. And this is, the chromatography is 15 minutes. And we're looking at 34 minutes. We're looking at twice as long, and we're not seeing any conversion of the thioarsenite to any other thing, anything else. Now, when we come back, okay, so if we just put arsenate in the same allele, the same concentration of sulfur, everything's the same, just instead of being arsenite, it's arsenate. What we're seeing is that, and this is four times, we want to make sure that we really want to make sure that we covered, definitely make sure that there was no way that we could say, anyone could say this, in that time when we thought, as you can see, it's almost all arsenic. And if we come back a little bit further, this is, so we come back to this. This is the actual thio species. First thing you see is the arsenic on, then you see the arsenic, then you see the 1:1, 2:1, 3:1, and then the thio arsenic can get 4:1. And so those are the basic positions. But the problem is, we also see the arsenic coming out of the same place, so. And we don't get a good separation, so. Yeah. Actually, if you're talking about reduced, so we probably would see probably a 3:1 or a 2:1 thioarsenite would be the dominant species. Actually, what we've been seeing, which is I didn't have time to show here today, is that if you look at what Rick Wilkin had produced for constants earlier, our data mimics that. It's not exact. There are some problems, but those constants are actually pretty decent at mimicking what we see in the excess when we vary concentration. So.
Do you have a question?
Yes. Did you do anything to optimize the chromatography? Or did you just take the measurements straight out of the paper?
We actually have looked at several different papers. We've looked at what the group out of Canada, Walshegler, has done. We've looked at what Stouder had did. We've looked at a couple other methods. We've looked at that. Now we're actually trying and manipulating eluents. We've actually switched gears now. We have something that looks promising, but we still don't know because we haven't went back and did the exhaustion to see what's going on. But yeah, we've worked on doing that. We've changed concentrations, we've changed column types, we've changed all the parameters that we can possibly think about changing, and we just don't see it. Because the problem is with the XAS is that we're just not going to be able to get the sensitivity. One, and two, if you want to go out in the real world, you're not going to be able to go to the beam with every single sample that you want to do. So we're really hoping that we can get this method to work, but so far, I haven't had.
Any other questions? Let me ask one question.
Okay.
So, comparing this chromatographic separation of thioarsenates with the existing typical arsenic chromatographic separation techniques. Yeah. My question is, Are you using an existing protocol, for example, for DMA, MMA, or even Roxasome?
This method is separate from that. Now, the new method that we're testing is based on the Roxasome, the organic arsenical separation, and so it's a little bit different than that, but we're trying that LUS to see if we can get better separation of the thiol species. So we are looking at that, and that's what the new one we're...
So were you able, for example, to identify 1 gram Roxasome as well as thiol arsenates?
In another method, not this method either. There's another method we have that does...
So you didn't solve this method, right?
No, there's two different methods that we use for the arsenical. First, we're concerned about the inorganic for this method, and basically we're just not seeing the separation that we'd like to see here. But we can switch gears and go to the other method. We do get separation, can't see.
Because I'm sure you're aware of that there's usually a discrepancy between total dissolved arsenic concentration, mm-hmm. for example, in animal waste, with several known arsenic species that you can quantify with a chromatographic separation, right? So several people ascribe this difference to potential organoarsenical metabolites, or who knows what.
Right.
So do you think this difference can also be filled with thioarsenates or thioarsenoids?
I mean, it depends. I can't really say because I don't know the redox conditions of where you're collecting samples in the field. But if you had sulfide in there, yeah, I mean, it's possible that, you know, if you cleaved off the arsenic and, you know, it would react with the sulfide, you might be seeing that. And then with the organic method, you won't see the thiol species. Unless you let extend the run times longer and you have to do some other optimizing of the flow.
That would be an interesting optimization.
Yeah, and that's a little beyond me. Somebody else was doing that work. So.
Well, let's conclude for the first half of this session. Thank you very much. Let's take a quick break and let's get back almost 5 minutes.